Morning, everyone. Today's Daf and Sanhedrin, Sadi Aleph. We are in Sadi Ahmed Aleph. We're half a number behind. We started yesterday, Perek Chelek, the 11th Perek of Sanhedrin. I mentioned already this point before, but just to reiterate, the 10th, 11th Perakim of Sanhedrin is probably flipped, meaning that we just finished the 10th Perek of Sanhedrin yesterday, and probably that belongs in the 11th slot, and the 11th Perek belongs in the 10th slot. The greatest indication that that's in fact so is because the last mission that we just did in the end of the 10th parak had to do with Edom Zomimim. Next Masech that we're going to be doing is Makos. First parak of Makos deals with Edom Zomimim. So, in other words, we generally assume a segue from one Masech to the next, and so it probably makes most sense that the parakim got flipped. Anyway, there's more discussion on that, but for our purposes right now, here's where we are. We're in the 11th parak. And Kol Yisrael. Kol Yisrael, this parak is dedicated to the topic of the basic tenets of Yiddishkeit. What do we have to believe in as Jews? The Rambam organized that information, but the Rambam organized that information, obviously, well after the Gemara was recorded. The Rambam got that basic information from our Gemara, meaning the Rambam took all of our Gemaras together and put them together to create Yud Gimel Ikarim, 13 principles of faith. So the Animamims of the Rambam. The Mishnah over here, I introduced ourselves yesterday to the Mishnah. The Mishnah is giving us the basic tenets, and the repercussions of the Mishnah are very serious, meaning the Mishnah tells us that a person who does not have his basic tenets and his basic beliefs set forth, so that person does not have a portion of the world to come. So obviously, really serious ramifications for somebody who is not a believer. But when we say a believer, what does he have to believe in? So yesterday we saw the Mishnah. I'll run through the Mishnah again quickly right now. Everything in the Mishnah is going to be discussed at length through the Gemara. This parak over here is 13 blot. It takes us from here until the end of the Masechta, Daf Kuf Yud Gimel. And so everything here is going to be discussed in great detail. So, as I read through the Mishnah, I realize that I'm going to be reading quickly. By the way, my math is just fantastic today. It's not 13, it's 23. Okay, small difference. 23 pages from here until the end of the Masechta. Wow, 24 if you count today's daf. Anyway, or yesterday's daf. Kol Yisrael yesh lem chelek olam haba. Everyone has got a portion of the world to come. Shenemar v'amech ulam tzadikim lolam yushu arat nin neitzer matai masi adai lispayer. Okay, thank Miami Beach, Miami Boys Choir for familiarizing myself with the pasuk. Anyway, every Jew's got a portion of the world to come. The Gemara quotes the pasuk from Yeshayahu, speaking to this idea that Amech Kulam Tzadikim, we're all considered Tzadikim. Ve'elu she'elam chelak olam haba. Now, like I mentioned yesterday, I'll still repeat again quickly today. You know, with every rule, there's an exception. The rule is we all have a chelak in olam haba. There are exceptions. And the exceptions are Ha'omer and Tchias HaMeitzim in the Torah. Someone who says that Tchias HaMeitzim cannot be found in the Torah. And I pointed this out yesterday. I'm just going to reiterate again today. Rashi writes over here, it's not enough just simply to say, I believe in Tchias HaMeitzim. Meaning that in of itself is a step, but it's actually not the full step. The full step to be a true mom and a real believer is to say that it's not that just we believe in Tchias HaMeitzim, but we also believe that you can find Tchias HaMeitzim in the Torah. Now, where are you going to find in the Torah? So stay tuned. In today's daf, tomorrow's daf. So the Gemara is going to cite 18 different Ramazim, hints and allusions in the Torah where we find this idea of Tchias HaMeitzim. The Ein Torah Min HaShamayim, or someone who says that Torah is not divine, I mean, it didn't come from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Apikoros and an Apikoros. The Gemara later on will describe exactly what the Apikoros is, as mentioned in the Mishnah. Rabbi Kiva Amar Afikar B'Sfar Machitan. Rabbi Kiva says that if you're reading the literally external books, right, Sfar Machitanim are works of anti-God, right, works that various works that were written by heretics that take you away from Emunah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Va'alochish alamak va'amar. And someone who puts his mouth right up against a wound and does the following incantation. So why an incantation like that is something that's so serious that it removes somebody from his portion of the world to come. Again, the Gemara is going to be discussing that point. You take Hashem's name and you pronounce it in the way that it is spelled. Again, the Gemara is going to be discussing why that is such a serious offense. So after giving now categories of people who do not get a portion of the world to come, now what the Mishnah is going to be describing are actual people in history who have lost a portion of the world to come. So, Shlosh HaMalachim, so there are three kings that we can point to. Yeravam, Achav, Menashe. Yeravam, the king of Israel who divided the northern kingdom from the southern kingdom, meaning after Shlomo HaMelech, Shlomo son Rechavam took the throne. When Rechavam took the throne, so Yeravam was the one who separated him together with the 10 tribes, moved, basically created a wall, dividing the north from the south. And not only that, but he also introduced Avodah Zarah into the northern kingdom. Achav, which we already discussed a number of times in the course of Masechta Sanhedrin, one of the kings of Israel, who again reintroduced Avodah Zarah, was a rabid idolater, and also we just learned the other day he also killed his neighbor. Okay, and Menashe, was the son of Chizkiyahu. Again, we're going to be discussing him in much great detail over the course of this parak. So these are people who are, these are kings, I should say, who do not have a portion of the world to come. Rav Yehuda Amar Menashe Yesh Lo Chelek Lo Mabash Nemar. Now, interestingly, the Gemara is going to have a debate whether or not Menashe does or does not receive a portion of the world to come. It's fair to ask, from our perspective, what difference does it make whether he does or does not receive a portion of the world to come? Meaning, what halachic ramification does it have? It's a reasonable question right now. I don't have a reasonable answer. Okay, I'll look more into it. But anyway, the Tanaim debate this very issue. Shenemar v'ispala alav v'ishma t'chinaso v'yishivu Yerushalayim v'machuso. In fact, Menashe at the end of his life does tshuva, and he tries to bring the Jewish people back to Torah at the end of his life. Meaning, after living a life of idolatry and right, he was a real anti-God. But at the end of his life, he did some form of tshuva. So Amr lo, so the Chachamim said to Rav Yehuda, no, you're wrong. L'machuso yeshiva v'lo l'chayel amamba. Yeah, he was brought back to the kingdom, meaning he ended up becoming the king, but he does not get a portion of the world to come. V'lo l'chayel amamba yeshiva. Arba hejotos. Now, there are four notable personalities in history who do not have a portion of the world to come. Bilam doeg achitofel gechazi. Again, we're going to go through all these in great detail. So we'll wait till the Gemara in order to discuss these people. We start with the Gemara. We're on the very bottom of Tzadi Amad Aleph. V'kol kach lama. The Gemara's question is, so much meaning. You're going to lose your portion of the world to come simply because you do not believe in Tchias HaMesim. So the Tana, so the Gemara quotes the Braisa. Who kafir b'tchias HaMesim? L'ficha lo yelo chelik b'tchias HaMesim. So the Gemara says, look, mida k'neged mida. If you don't believe in Tchias HaMesim, so you're not going to get a portion in Tchias HaMesim. It's a simple measure for measure. It's just reciprocity. Shekol mida sof shekol shbaruch mida k'neged mida. It is one of the biggest themes that we have out there. That in the way that the Kodesh Baruch Hu operates the world is mida k'neged mida, measure for measure. So Damar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman Amar Rav Yonos Aminan Shekol mida sof shekol Kodesh Baruch Hu mida k'neged mida. How do I know that God operates this world using the principle of mida k'neged mida? Shenemar. The Gemara quotes from Sefer Malachim. Vayomer Elisha Shamu Dvar Hashem Keis Machar Sa'a Solos B'Shekel V'Sosayim Sa'orim B'Shekel B'Shar Shomron. So there was a great famine during the days of Elisha the Navi. And so what he does is he has a Nevoah, and with his Nevoah he makes a promise. Tomorrow there is going to be grain. There's going to be wheat and there's going to be barley, and with one shekel you can buy a saw of wheat, you can buy two saw of barley. It's a good price. Meaning, all we need to do is just wait one day and there's going to be food. There's going to be grain. Now, at the time, they simply didn't know how this was going to be, meaning it didn't look like there was any produce in the market, so we wait one day and so all's going to be good. So, k'siv, ayana shlisha sher, yishan ayado es isha lokim, vayomer hinei Hashem osa arivos b'shamayim, hayichi adavar hazeh. So, there was a general at the time, and the general said to Elisha, look, if windows opened up from heaven and it started raining down flour, so then, yeah, maybe. And I'm like, okay, like I could see that. But basically, what he said to Elisha is, I don't believe it. Meaning, that it's not going to happen. So, Vayomer, Hinach Roeh Beinechu Misham Lo Sochel. So, Elisha says, really? You don't believe? Meaning, I'm telling this to you through Nevuah. And you don't believe? So, let me tell you what's going to happen. The grain will come, like I promised, like I forecast, and you're not going to benefit from it. Uksiv, Vayilo Ken, Vayimusu Osoham Bishar Vayamos. And then the Navi goes on to describe how, actually, the grain did come, and unexpectedly, meaning that the enemy's armies were on the other side of the camp, the enemies fled, and leaving all their food behind, and all their food behind was looted by the Jews, and just like the Navi predicted. So there was a scarcity of food, and now there was an abundance of food. And this general who was the non-believer, so he was trampled. In other words, there was a big rush to get the grain, and this general was trampled, as the Navi predicted. So what do you see over here? This idea of midah keneged midah. If you don't believe in something, so you're not going to experience it, and you're not going to enjoy it. Now, v'dilma kilas elisha garmalei. Now, maybe the Gemara is just trying to be a little bit argumentative. So the Gemara says, maybe the general just died simply because he was cursed by the Navi. We know that if somebody curses you and it's a chacham, it's going to come even if undeserved. So the Gemara says, well, if the pasuk would have just simply said that he was trampled and he died, maybe. Maybe then credit can go to Elisha's curse. However, my bishar al iske shar. But if you read the pasuk carefully, it says that he was trampled because of the market, meaning it's because of the grain. So now we know that the reason why he was trampled is because of his lack of belief in the nevuah that the grain was going to come. And again, midah keneged midah operates in such that if you don't believe in something, so you're not going to experience it, you're not going to enjoy it. Amar Rav Yochanan. Okay, the parentheses may not belong here. Minan t'ches ha'mesim min ha'Torah. All right, so where do we see t'ches ha'mesim min ha'Torah? Meaning, it's a fundamental tenet. We have to believe in it. And again, like I said to Rashi from the beginning, not only do you have to believe in Tchias HaMesim, but we have to believe that it's rooted, that source in the Torah. So I'll ask you a question, but you don't have to answer me right now. So where do we find this in the Torah? Meaning, where in the Torah does it explicitly talk about Tchias HaMesim? So it's nowhere explicit in the Torah. You got to tease it out of Pesukim. And what the Gemara is now going to do is, for the rest of yesterday's daf, for today's daf, for tomorrow's daf, so the Gemara is going to go through a series of psukim in terms of teasing it out. So I didn't count, but it's been reported that there are 18 different sources, which works out wonderful because 18 is high, and we're talking about Tchias HaMesim. So there are 18 different sources in which the Gemara is going to turn to in terms of finding allusions and Ramazim in the Torah where we find Tchias HaMesim. So here we go with number one. Now, keeping count is going to be very hard because the Gemara is going to weave in and out of this discussion. The Gemara is going to go on tangents. And the Gemara is operating in the way that it normally does, so it's hard to keep score. So if given enough time today, so I'll actually count it out. So that which I've heard that it's 18 actually fits in if fits in well. So minan tchias ha'mesim min ha'Torah shenemar. So here we go. Now this is our first remez in the Torah. Unasata mimenu es trumas Hashem la'Aaron ha'Kohen. I'm going to give truma to Aaron. Now let's consider. Aaron never made it into Israel. The only time that we're chayv and trumas ha'maisos is only after we enter into Israel. And even then, it doesn't start right away. Only after 14 years after having entered into Eretz Yisrael, because it took 7 years to conquer the land, 7 years to divide the land. So, how can Aaron be getting truma? No. V'chi Aaron lo'olam kayyam v'alo lo nichlas Eretz Yisrael. Shenos lo'olam truma. The Gemara asked this question. Aaron could not have gotten truma because he never entered into Eretz Yisrael. El melami cha'asi lachos v'yisrael nosin lo truma. It means that Aaron's going to come back to life. And Aaron is going to be the recipient of Truma. Mikan Tchias HaMesim in the Torah. This is one remez in the Torah where we see this idea of Tchias HaMesim that we're going to come back. Debe Rabbi Shmuel Tan La Aaron Ke Aaron. Ma Aaron Chaver Af Banav Chaverim. Now, Debe Rabbi Shmuel looks at the same pasuk but arrives at a different conclusion. Meaning that Debe Rabbi Shmuel has all the other sources which we haven't seen yet, in which we can have hints and allusions to Tchias HaMesim in the Torah. But as far as this particular pasuk, so Tan Debe Rabbi Shmuel learns out a different point, which is the following. Just like Aaron is a chaver, meaning he's somebody who's scrupulous in his performance of halacha, af banav chaverim. That means when you give truma to a kohen, it can't be just any kohen, it must be a kohen chaver. Meaning it must be a kohen who's careful about halachas, and specifically tumah tahara. We know that a kohen who eats truma in a state of tumah is chayv misa. In fact, we just discussed this the other day. And so, that's the whole point. The point is you've got to be careful of which kohen you give it to. I'm Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, I'm Rabbi Yonos, I'm Inan, Shein Ostin, Truma, La Kohen, Am Ha'aretz. How do I know that you're not allowed to give Truma to a kohen who's an Am Ha'aretz? Shenem Rav Yomar La'am Li'Yoshe Yushalem Vaseis Menas La'man Yechzugu B'Toras Hashem. The purpose of giving Truma to the kohen is so that he could be machzik, he can uphold Toras Hashem. Kol Ha'machzik B'Toras Hashem Yesh La'manas V'Shein Machzik B'Toras Hashem Ein La'manas. You get a portion only if you're machzik Torah. If you're not machzik Torah, you do not get a portion. Amar Rav Acha bar Ada, Amar Rav Yehuda, kol hanosin truma lakohen am ha'aretz ke'ilu nosna lifnei ari. Giving truma to a kohen am ha'aretz is tantamount to giving it to a lion. Ma'ari safik doris va'ochel, safik ein doris va'ochel. You don't know what the lion's going to do. Is the lion going to rip it apart and eat? Is the lion not even going to rip it apart and eat? Av kohen amaretz safik ochle betara safik ochle betuma. With the kohen amaretz, because he's not careful about tuma tahara, he may eat the truma in a state of tuma. He may eat the truma in a state of tahara, and you don't know. And so, therefore, don't give it to the kohen amaretz. Rav Yochanan amar af garim lo misa. You're causing misa b'dei shamayim by giving a kohen am haaretz truma. Shenemra mesu bo ki yichaleluhu. We quoted this pasuk just a couple days ago, right? You die, a kohen who is in a state of tuma eating truma is subject to misa b'dei shamayim. Debei Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov tama af masio avon ashama. You're going to be causing sin and guilt to the kohen am haaretz when you give him truma. Shenemra visio sam avon ashama ba'achlam es kachehem. As they're eating the holy foods of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning the Truma, and they're not in a state of Tahara, so it causes Avon and Asham, sin and guilt. Tanya Rabbi Simai Omer Menayim Tchias HaMesim in the Torah. Okay, now we're back. Back to another remez in the Torah for Tchias HaMesim. Shenem Rav Gama Kimosi SBC Itam, Lasis Lahem Es Eretz Kanan, Es Eretz Kanan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, I'm going to keep my promise to the Avos. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and I'm going to give them the land of Israel. Now, carefully, read the pasuk carefully, it says Lahem. I'm going to make sure to give them the land of Israel. Now, it doesn't say Lachem lo Nemar. It doesn't say I'm giving it to you. El Lahem. I'm giving it to them. Now, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov at this point in time have already passed on. They're not in this world. They're underground. Mikalim Tchias HaMeis Min HaTorah. So this is a remez. This is going to be our second. Okay, number two, I guess we'll count it. As our second remez in the Torah of Tchias HaMeis. Shalom in the Misrabin Gamliel. And now a lot of discourse. A lot of discourse and a lot of fighting. Arguments that are going to be taking place in the course of the upcoming Gemaras between various heretics. And the biggest battler of the heretics, I don't really mean to speak in the superlative, but Rabbi Gamliel seems to have dealt with this extensively. So I don't know if that's true empirically, but for sure, we see Rabbi Gamliel dealing with the heretics all the time. So, and by the way, Rabbi Gamliel was the one who authored the extra bracha in Shmona Esrei, right, against the heretics. So,
Rabbi, is there anywhere that it's indicated that it's really reinforcing the fact that there's a Gan Eden, that their souls went up to another world, and they're getting the benefit in this world?
I mean, we're going to... Right, so we're going to also discuss that extensively in this parak as well. Again, but you'll see, it's coming up. Okay, Shalom. My name is Rabbi Gamliel. My name is Hakadosh Baruch Hu Mechayim Esim. How do I know this heretic says to Rabbi Gamliel? How do I know that Hakadosh Baruch Hu is going to resurrect the dead? So Amalem and Atorim and Neviim and Aksivim v'lo kiblu mimenu. So Rabbi Gamliel says, look, I have a pasuk in the Torah, in the Navi, in Ksuvim, all Tanakh. I can go through all three, and I can say pasukim from all three. But I also happen to know that you're not going to accept any of these sources. I mean, you're a heretic. I mean, that's just the nature. And parenthetically now, the Gemara is going to tell us what these sources are of Rabbi Gamliel. So, min ha-Torah dichsiv vayam Hashem al Moshe hinecha shochev ha-mavasecha v'kam. So we start off with a pasuk that we actually just read in Chumash as we finished the Torah over Yontif. So Hashem says to Moshe, so you're going to be shochev ha-mavasecha. You're going to go lie down with your forefathers, v'kam, and you're going to get up. Now, to be fair, right, full disclosure, if you look at the pasuk, you'll see that this reading of the pasuk is really a difficult reading of the pasuk, because the word v'kam really goes on the next phrase of the pasuk. In fact, that's why the heretic will not accept this. Now, the reading that we just did of the pasuk is certainly viable, but in the context of the pasuk, though, it is really a difficult read of the pasuk. Amr lo, so they say to him, v'dama v'kama amah azeh v'zana, v'zana. Well, what do you mean? The word v'kam actually is going on the second half of the pasuk, which means that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Moshe is, and you know this nation is going to go and worship idols. So already Rabbi Gamliel knows his audience. Rabbi Gamliel knows that the heretic is not going to accept this as a proof. Minna nevim dechsev, yichyu meisecha, nevlesi yikumun, hekitzav renanu shochnei alfar. Kital oros talecha, ve'eretz rafim tapil. Pasuk in Yeshayahu gives a pretty clear and graphic description of how we're going to wake up, we're going to sing praises to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'dilma meisim shetich, she'echi yecheskel, and to which the heretic could just simply say, oh yeah, that is talking about resurrection of the dead. But that was historical resurrection of the dead, meaning that's talking about Yechezkel. Yeshayahu lived about 100 years before Churban Bayis Rishon. Yechezkel lived during Churban Bayis Rishon, but during the days of Yechezkel, at least in the 37th chapter of Yechezkel, so we have Tchias HaMeisim. We have the bones that got resurrected. So what the heretic can say is, look, it's true that Nevuah is talking about a resurrection of the dead, but not the ultimate resurrection of the dead. That was just talking about the small little blip in history of Yechezkel and the dry bones. Minak Suvim, and we're going to now go to Pasuk and Shir Shirim, third section of Tanakh, Dechsiv, V'chikech Chayayin Atov Alech L'Dodil L'Mesherim Dovev S'fasei Yishenim. The lips of those sleeping, meaning underground. So they're going to be moving, meaning they're going to come up from the dead and they're going to start singing again. Gemara says, again, that's not an absolute proof because we could just simply say that, yes, the lips of the dead are moving, but that actually goes in conjunction with another Masorah that we have. And the tradition is, Amar Rav Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon, Mishum Rabbi Shimon, call me, Shenemra Halacha Bishmo, Ba'alam Azeh, Sifsosav Dovavos Bekevim. If you say over a halacha in somebody's name, his lips are going to be quivering in his underground. Which, again, to the Gemara could be understood on the simplest level, which is that you're going to create a zchus for the person that you're saying over his Torah. Shenemar, Dovev Sifasei Yishanim. So, and in other words, Rabbi Gamliel basically goes through Pasuk in Torah, Pasuk in Navi, Pasuk in Ksuvim, and he says, look, I know the heretic's not going to accept any of that. Okay, so now close parentheses, meaning, and so what did Rabbi Gamliel say to the heretic? So, Acha Amar Lahem Mikrozeh. So, Asherish Ba'ashem Lavosechem Laseis Lahem. So we go back to this idea where I'm going to give the forefathers the land of Israel that I said to them. Lachem lo nemar lalehem, mikan lo tchias ha-meisim in the Torah. And again, it's the idea where who's this subject over here in this pasuk? The subject is the avos. How are they getting Eretz Yisrael? They're long dead. Answer, tchias ha-meisim. V'yesh omen min ha-mikra hazeh, amr lehem v'atem ha-dvekim ha-shem alokechem chayim kulchem ayom. Or another pasuk that also speaks to this idea is that we are going to be chayim kulchem ayom. We're going to be continuously living. Mayom kulchem kayamim, afo lamaba kulchem kayam. Just like now you're all alive, so too, for Olam Haba, you're also all going to be alive. Okay, so two different sources. This is why it's hard to keep count now, because I guess this is now number 3 and 4. But anyway, two other sources in the Torah that have Ramazim for Tchias HaMesim. Shalom Ramim is Rav Yeshua ben Chananya Menashe Kadosh Baruch Hu Mechayim Esim. So the Ramim asked Rav Yeshua ben Chananya, where do we have this idea of Tchias HaMesim? And how do I know that God is omniscient? How do I know that God knows the future? So Amalu Tavayim in the Mikra Azeh Shenemar. So he quotes the pasuk at the end of Devarim. Vayomer Hashem El Moshe Hincha Shochiv Amavasecha VeKam Ha'am Azeh VeZana. So again, we already worked with this pasuk, and the word VeKam, as presented by Rav Yeshua ben Chananya, like we presented earlier, is going on both the first phrase and the second phrase. First phrase meaning, you're going to go lie down with your forefathers and then you're going to get up. And then we could also attach it to the second phrase, and the nation is going to get up and it's going to leave HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To which the Roman said to Rabbi Yeshua, you don't have to do that. Meaning the word v'kam could just simply be going on the second phrase, not on the first phrase. So Rabbi Yeshua says, okay, fine, I hear you. But at least the second question was answered. Meaning, you're asking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's omniscience and how does he know about the future? Or even the way you're reading the pasuk. At least your second question is answered. So Rav Yochanan has this as a Masorah from Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai, the Rashbi, that this pasuk speaks to both ideas, the idea of Tchias HaMeisim and Kadosh Baruch Hu knows the future. Tanya Amar Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi B'davar Zeh Z'yafta Sifrei Minim. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi says that I was able to literally forge, but basically challenge the credibility of the works of the heretics. Shayu Omer Main Tchias HaMeisim in the Torah. They were making the argument that you cannot find Tchias HaMeisim in the Torah. Amartelem Ziyaftem, Taraskem Velo, Halisim Yadchem Klum. You forged our Torah, you counterfeited our Torah, and you got nothing. Sha'atem or remains chetzem etzem in the Torah. You make this argument, no such thing as resurrection from the Torah. So the Torah, in describing Avodah Zarah, says a person who is over the Avodah Zarah will be cut off with the double language, hachres tachres, and avonaba. And also he's going to be bearing a sin. So hachres tachres bolamazah, avonaba le'emas. So he'll be cut off in this world. And then he's also going to have to bear a sin. Well, when's that going to be? Lav la'olam haba. So that's obviously a reference to some other time, specifically olam haba. Amalei re'apapa la'abai v'leim aluhu tavai ma'achres achris. So maybe I could arrive at that conclusion. I don't even need to get to the last part of the pasuk. Meaning just simply from the hachres tachris, we could actually arrive at this deduction. Because hachres tachris means what? It means you will be cut off, you will be cut off. And this world, and in the world to come. So inu hava amr lu dibratur kolashim ene adam. Yeah, but he says, but I know what they're going to say. No, sometimes the Torah uses a double language because sometimes the Torah speaks like we speak, which is an argument that we find throughout the Gemara. Kid tonight, the Gemara now points out, the way that to read this pasuk in Parsha Shlach is actually subject to a machlokus atanaim. Hachris tachris hachris balam azet hachris balam abad divrei Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so you see that Rabbi Akiva actually breaks up the first two words into two different ideas, this world and the next world. And Amar lo Rabbi Shmuel v'alok for Namar es Hashem hu megadef v'nichrasa. What do you mean? We already know that the Megadef, which as Rashi points out over here, is referring to the Ovid of Avodah Zarah, is going to be cut off. V'chishlosha olamim yesh. Now, we know there are two worlds. There's Olam Haz and Olam Haba. There's no third world. Ela v'nichrasa b'olam hazeh. Hachreis olam haba. So, the v'nichrasa, which is going on the Megadef, is in this world. And Hachreis is referring to Olam Haba. Hachreis tachreis Torah kol hashem b'nei adam. And the double language, okay, the Torah speaks in the way you and I speak. Bein Rabbi Shmuel, Bein Rabbi Kiv, Avon Abba, my Avdi Bey, fine. So now, we have just learned a brisa together, that Rabbi Kiv and Rabbi Shmuel already learned this idea that the Ovid of Avodah Zarah is going to be cut off from both worlds, this world and the next world, and they don't even need to get to the end of the pasuk of Avon Abba. So, simple question, what do they do with that last phrase? So, Lichidatanya, Yachal, Afil, Asa, Chuva, Tamalam, Avon Abba. Lo, Marti, Elabazman, Shavon Abba. So, is this going to stick with you even if you don't do tshuva? To which the Gemara says, no. Even as an Ovid of Avodah Zarah, if you do tshuva before you depart from this world, so you are going to get a chelik in Olam Haba. She'ila Cleopatra Machasa es Rabbi Meir. So Cleopatra asks, the queen, asks the following question from Rabbi Meir. Amr yadana dechai shachvi, dechsi v'yatsitsu me'ir ke'esev ha'aretz. So, she starts off with the following. Look, I'm on board. This idea, Tchias Amesim, I'm all in. In fact, she quotes a pasuk from Tehillim. V'yatzitzu me'ir ke'esev ha'aretz. We're going to sprout up like grass in the ground. Ela k'shein omdim arumim o b'levushim. So she basically says, look, I got the belief. I'm with you. And I even see it in Tanakh. I just want to like to know, when we come up from the ground, are we coming up clothed or not clothed? So b'levushim omdim. Amela kavachomer mechita. So, let's go with the analogy. Meaning the pasuk in Tehillim describes us as like we're spreading out from the ground. So when you take a seed, which is planted naked, and you put it in the ground, so how does it spread out of the ground? Covered in layers and layers of chaff. We bury the dead with clothing on. So simple kavachomer will tell us that if the seed buried naked comes out with clothing, with covering, we are buried with clothing, for sure going to come out with layers of clothing. I'm like Kesel Rebbe Gamliel, I'm Risa Deshafri Chaya. Ha, va'afra, va'afra, mika chaya. The Caesar says to Rebbe Gamliel, you guys say that the dead are going to come back to life, but you're dirt at that point in time, meaning, right, he's assuming a full decomposition of the body, and now you're just dirt, and well, Akash Baruch Hu can just simply make a person out of dirt. We're now in the very top of Tzadi Aleph Amid Aleph. And the daughter of Caesar says to Rabbi Gamliel, you don't need to answer my father, I'll answer my father. Okay, keep it out of aim. Okay, not now. So I'll answer my father. So,
Eizem en Meshubach.
So she asks her father a rhetorical question. Let's say we have two people making pottery in our town. One is able to produce it out of water, which is near impossible, but let's just say that one pottery maker can make it out of water and the other one makes it out of the standard mud. Which one is more amazing? So I'm related, she owes him in a mine. So the Caesar answers his daughter, well, obviously, if you can manufacture some sort of pottery out of water, that's rather amazing. So, to which the daughter says to Caesar, look, God produces a human being from basically water. Rashi says, we're talking about zera, we're talking about the semen. So, if you're on board with the idea that God can form a human body out of liquid, so then what's the big leap then to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can create the human body out of clay? Debei Rabbi Shmuel also learns the same idea, but just uses a logical deduction from glass. Ma kli zechuchis shamalam beruch basav adam nishbara yesh lam takana. Basav adam. I'm sorry. Yesh lo takana. When you talk about glass, how is it made? It's made up from our hot air, meaning we blow into the glass and we make it. Now, what if it breaks? So you throw it back into the kiln. I'm making this out like it's no big deal. Because what do I know from glass making? But you throw it back into the kiln, you heat it up again, and you blow it again. So, we human beings were also blown into existence using the breath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if we're made with the breath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you don't think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can easily repair us and bring us back to life? Amalu amina le Rabbi Ami. A heretic says to Rabbi Ami, Amisa deshafchi chai v'afra mika chaye. So again, the argument that we already heard from Caesar, now we're hearing it from a heretic. How can a HaKadosh Baruch Hu recreate a human being from dirt? To which Rabbi Ami says, here, let's try a parable. Go build for me a palace, and you know what? You're not going to be using the standard material, right? Not dirt, not water. In other words, somehow, with whatever materials you can get your hands on, you're going to make me a palace. So they made a palace, but obviously not working with the right material, so the palace was built, but it fell down. Then the king says to his servants, okay, now I'll allow you to use dirt and water, and now make me a new palace. To which they say, oh, we can't do that. So the king gets angry. Before, when you didn't have the requisite material, you were able to somehow do it. Granted, it didn't last, but you were able to do it. Now that you have actually good building material, you want to tell me that you can't build me a castle? Obviously you can. And if you don't fully believe me, so go out to the valley and you're going to see a kind of a rodent where it is half made up of organic material and half of it is made up of inorganic material. This is the second time in Shas where you have this idea of such a creature. The other time in Shas is in Chulin, where the Gemara speaks about this creature that's a composition of organic and inorganic material. Now, obviously, we nowadays can't point to such a creature. We don't know of the existence of such a creature. The Rambam, who is the ultimate rationalist, so he writes in his Perush HaMishnayos in Chulin on the Mishnah that describes the same creature. So he writes, I know it's hard to believe, this is the Rambam writing. I'm paraphrasing right now. I don't have the Rambam in front of me. But he writes, I know this is hard to believe, but he says, but it's been reported to me by many zoologists that such a creature exists. And so he doesn't have first-hand visualization of such a creature, but he actually reports that it's been reported. Anyway, Lamacher Hishrutz V'Nasa Kulo Basar. And what happens is that this creature, which is a hybrid of organic and inorganic, eventually becomes organic. So this obviously is this will be a model for Tchias HaMesim, meaning that we decompose into dirt, but right, Kadosh Baruch Hu could take inorganic and turn it organic. Shema Tomar is Mam Meruba, and maybe you'll tell me, fine, but this, it's a long time lapse to get from inorganic to organic. It's not true. Go up to the mountain and see that there's only one chilazon. And then what's going to happen is that you're going to go the next day after the rain and you're going to find countless number of chilazonos. Now, chilazon is a type of animal. In terms of its identification, Rashi over here actually writes that the chilazon that the Gemara here is describing is the chilazon, meaning the one that's used to dye the tzitzis in order to create the blue color for the tzitzis and also for the big day kahuna. See Rashi for a brief description of the chilazon. And obviously this leads to a much lengthier discussion of the identity of the chilazon. It's not our topic for now. Amalei Umina leGevia ben Pesisa. A heretic now talks to Gevia ben Pesisa. Gevia ben Pesisa is going to get a lot of real estate in today's daf. Okay, who is he? I don't know. Okay, sorry for the lack of information. But I do know the following based on the upcoming Gemaras. Number one, he's a hunchback, which it's an odd detail, but it happens to be the Gemara is going to report that. And number two is that he himself views himself as nobody special. Okay? He calls himself a hedgehog. So that's it. That's all I got for you on who he is. He lived sometime during the Second Temple, and based on the Gemara later on, so I would put him in the beginning of the Second Temple. Okay, anyway. How mina la gvia ben pesisa? So this heretic says to him, Vailachon chayavin, you people who are guilty people, damrisa mesin chayin. Dechayin, mesin, the mesin chayin. So look, you crazy people, you think that dead people are coming back to life, right? Living people die, but you go even one step further and you say that the dead people are going to come back to life. You guys are crazy. So Amr Lay, so Gavia says back to the heretic, Vailachon chayavi, you people are guilty. Damrisa mesin lo chayin. Because you're making the argument that we're not going to come back to life. And here he starts off with a simple argument. Look, how did you and I come into existence? Right? From nothing. Okay? Meaning, right? Where was our genesis, you and I? Okay, so I understand there's a good biological explanation. But basically, we materialized out of basically nothing. And you're okay with that. And it really upsets you, like in other words, it really offends you that we're then going to be resurrected after having died. Like it's right. The logic of human life as it is almost implausible, and you're buying that resurrection. That's crazy. Amar le chayav karisili. So to which the heretic says back to Gavia, how can you call me somebody who is guilty? By the way, if you go back to the beginning of the dialogue. So he actually started off the name calling. But anyway. So I'm like Chayav Karile, how can you call me guilty? If I had an opportunity right now, I'd kick you so hard that basically I would correct your hunch. Right? You have a hunchback, and I kick you so hard that you would straighten out. So Amar Lay, here comes great banter. If you do that, you'd be a miraculous doctor and I'd pay you. Okay, just great banter back and forth. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan. Gemara now quotes a braisa. This is Megillas Tanis for the uninitiated. Megillas Tanis is a record of quasi-yontif days that took place during the second base of Mikdash. The Gemara in Tanis discusses this document at length. We still have this document to this very day. It goes over, reports numerous days on the Jewish calendar where we were persecuted by the Romans, by the Greeks, right? Whoever was oppressing us during the Second Temple, that basically covered it, right? Maybe a little bit of Persians as well, but by the Greeks and by the Romans, and we got like a little respite, and we got like a mini salvation. So for all these days that turned into days of mini salvation, so what do? We recorded in Megillas Tachanun, and those days then were like mini yontifs. They didn't say Tachanun on some of those days. They didn't say Tachanun on those days. Some of those days actually they eulogize, right? So in other words, if there was a funeral, so they would have to check Megillas Tanis and see, is this, you know, this one of those quasi-yontifs? If it is, so we'll have to skip the eulogy. To this day, the Gemara in Tanis tells us, Batla Megillas Tanis, it no longer is enforced, meaning all the days are still recorded, it just doesn't have any legal ramification nowadays, except for 2 days recorded in Megillas Tanis. You don't have to guess, I'll tell you. Those 2 days are Purim and Chanukah. Okay, those are the 2 days recorded in Megillas Tanis that still have legal force. The rest of them don't. Tanu Rabbanan. So now we're looking at one of the days recorded in Megillas Tanis. Be'esrim va'arba b'Nisan, on the 24th day of Nisan. In Tilu Dimusana Yehuda Mirshalayim. The oppressors were removed from Yehuda Mirshalayim, Kishabal Bnei Africa. So now there were people who were challenging us. And these challenges were removed on the 24th day of Nisan. Therefore, that day in Megillas Tanis was recorded as a quasi yantif. Right after Pesach. Right? Pesach ends on the 22nd. Okay, in Israel. Anyway, so the Kishabal Bnei Africa. Ladonim Yisrael, Lifnei Alexandros Muktim. So this takes us all the way back to Alexander Macedonia, right? We would call him Alexander the Great. So, and the Africans now go over to Alexander, who has now just conquered the whole world, and so now he's got a little bit of clout, he's got a little political clout, Alexander. And so now, being the owner and operator of the entire world, so the entire known world, so now the Africans go over and basically they make a claim, they make a petition. And look, you see those Jewish people living in Israel? They have our land, right? How do they claim it's their land? Amalah, Eretz Kanan Shalanuhi. The land belongs to us. Dichsiv. Eretz Kanan Ligvul Lo Seha U'Kanan Avon Danu. In fact, they refer to it as Eretz Kanan. And who is Kanan? This week's Parsha. So, In Shehavu. So, I'm sorry. U'Kanan Avon Danu In Shehavu. You know who Kanan is? That's our father. That's our father. Our forefather. That's our patriarch. So Amalu Gavia ben Pesisa la Chachamim. So this Gavia ben Pesisa goes over to the Chachamim and says, Tanu li Rishus. So do me a favor, give me permission. Ve'elech la'adoni mahem. And I'll debate them in front of Alexander the Great. Lifnei Alexander Muktam. Imi eskuni amru hajosha banu nitzachtem. So look, it's a win-win situation for you guys. Because if I win the debate, so, I'm sorry, let me start off in the correct order. If I lose the debate, so I'll just simply bow out from the debate and I'll say to Alexander the Great, I'm nobody. Meaning, right, I don't really represent the Jews, I'm a nobody. So, and if I win the debate, I'll give credit to the Torah and to the Jewish people. So from your standpoint, you got nothing to lose if I debate. So, okay, so he was given permission. Now he's debating in front of Alexander the Great, the challenge of the Africans. So let's set the ground rules for the debate. You're debating from where? So the Africans say, we're debating from the Torah. Okay, great. So we set the ground rules. The debate is coming from the Torah itself. Good. I will work with the same ground rules. I'll also debate you from the Torah. This week's Parsha. So, right, based on a series of events, where if you chazer over this week's parsha, you'll know, and I feel like you'll know it anyway. So, Kanan was cursed. Kanan was the son of Ham. Kanan was cursed. Eved Avadim Yelachav, and he is going to be a slave towards his brothers. So, Eved Kanan Nechasim Eved Lamim VeNechasim Lamim. Now, being that Kanan was supposed to be an Eved towards his brothers. So now, what's the general rule when it comes to Avadim? Whatever they acquire does not belong to them, but actually belongs to the owner. V'lo od elo shari kama shanim shelo avadatanu. In fact, do you know that now for years, I don't know how many, but for years, the descendants of Canaan have not been serving us and have not been have not done what they were supposed to have done. Amala machzan just malka hechzir lo tshuva. So, Alexander the Great now turns to the Africans and says, seems like a pretty good argument. What's your response to his argument? Amalo tenulan is mashal shayamin. So they say we need 3 days to think about it. Naslam is man, batku velo matzu. Tshuva. 3 days come and go. They couldn't find an answer. Miyad barchu. And realizing that not only do they not have an answer, but this argument now actually is going to encumber them and enslave them towards the brothers as part of their claim. Meaning they claim that they were descendants of Canaan. And now Gavia's right, meaning, oh, and you know what that means now? Okay, so they ran away. And they left their fields unharvested. And that year happened to have been a sabbatical year, which means that happens to have been that we needed the produce, and everything worked out really well. Well, as long as Alexander the Great had dominion over the entire world, so now the Egyptians are coming over to Alexander the Great, and they're going to now make a claim and a challenge for the land of Israel. So they say to Alexander the Great, you know, those Jewish people, they owe us a lot of money. They left Egypt, they borrowed, vayashilum. They borrowed all that gold and silver, they never returned it, they owe us all that money. Same setup. Gavia basically asks permission to debate, and again, presenting this as a win-win situation. And again, the ground rules of the debate, we're debating from the Torah. Fine, Egyptians agree to that. So, Gavia now points to the Torah and says, do you know how long we were slaves in Egypt? For 430 years. Now, between us friends over here, it wasn't exactly 430 years. It was short of 430 years. But again, it doesn't matter. It's an important point, but for our purposes, it doesn't matter. As far as the debate's concerned, it actually writes that in the Torah, that we were there slaves for 430 years. So, Tanu Lanus Kara Vodashal Shishim Ribushi Shibatim Mesam Shoshim Shana Varba Meoshana. So now, okay, remuneration. Meaning, we, a nation of 600,000 people, worked for you for 430 years. Okay, so listen, payment. That's all we ask for now. So, Amalem Alexandros Mukta Mechzir Lo Tshuva. So, Alexander now turns to the Egyptians and said, okay, now he's got a good point. Well, so what do you have to say about that? And again, with no answer to respond, so the Egyptians ran away, leaving their lands unharvested, which again, worked out well for the Jewish people. It was a sabbatical year. And we're going to do round three. Shuv pamachas ba b'nei Yishmael b'nei Keturah l'adonim Yisrael l'fnei Alexandros mokdam amr lo eretz kanan shelanu v'shelachem. So the b'nei Yishmael go over and they say, you know, this land is our land. I know, it's a popular song. But this land is this land is our land. Meaning, we're all descendants of Avraham, right? You and us. And so therefore, right, unlike in more modern Jewish history where they claim the entire land, at least in this claim, they're claiming that we should deserve a partnership on this land. So, Dichsiv, Ela told us Yishmael ben Avraham, Dichsiv, Ela told us Yitzchak ben Avraham. So, look, Yishmael ben Avram, Yitzchak ben Avram, right? You get it? Like, in other words, we also come from Avram, therefore we also have a right to the land. So, Amro Gavim ben Pesis al-Chacham, Tanili Rishos ve'elech v'adoni mehem, lefnei Alexandros Mokdam, imen Eschuni, Amro Hejor, Shabanu Nitzachtem, v'imani Nitzachos, Amro Lehem, Tars Moshe, Rabbeinu Nitzachtem, Nasnul Rishos, Halach v'dan imahem. Again, same setup. Gavia says, let me present the argument. Again, win-win. And again, ground rules of the debate, we're debating from the Torah. Fine. Shenemar, Vayitain Avraham is called Sherlo Li Yitzchak. Look at the end of Parshas Chayesara. What does it say very clearly in the Pasuk? Avraham did not wait till he died and allow for probate to kick in, but rather, Avraham allocated his estate to his children. And so to Yitzchak, he gave kol ha'shelo to Yitzchak. He gave everything to Yitzchak. Ulevnei pelikshim. And as far as the children of his concubines, Asher l'Avraham nasan l'Avraham matanos. He gave them lovely parting gifts. Avshe nasan agid l'avana b'chay v'shigar zemei alzeh klum yesh l'zeh alzeh klum. And basically, this is how it works. Meaning, if the father before he dies allocates his assets to his children, that's it. There is no longer any Yerusha to talk about. So Avram clearly gave the estate to Yitzchak, and as far as to the other ones, he gave gifts. Parenthetically, says the Gemara, what were the gifts? Meaning the Torah just simply says matanos. Rashi and Chumash brings this Gemara down. My matanos, I'm Rav Yirmiyahu Ba'aba, Malami Shemas Alehem, Shem Tumah. So what he gave them is Shem Tumah. Rashi over here says, sorcery, black magic. That is what he gave over to the B'nai Apilekshim. Okay, a lot of discussion regarding why specifically that? How could he give them that? Right? We learned earlier in the Masechta that some are of the opinion that that Bnei Noach are not allowed to engage in such activities. Anyway, much discussion about this Gemara over here. We're going to go on. Amalei Antoninus Lerebi. So Antoninus says the following to Rebbe. Right, for those of you who've been in the daf long enough, you'll know Antoninus is one of the Caesars. I think they identify him as Marcus Aurelius in any event. So he had an outstanding relationship with Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who lived after Churban Bayis Sheni, after the destruction of the Second Temple. So he and Antoninus were really close. They had a very close relationship. So it was not a combative relationship. They had a very good relationship. So, Guf and Hashem Yicholin Liftor Atzma Min Adin. I think, right, this is what the Caesar says to, Antoninus says to Rebbe. So I really think that Guf and Neshama can make the following excuse for themselves. After they leave the world, and as they're being judged, here could be their excuse. Ketzad, Guf Omer Neshama Chatas. Shemiyom Shapir Shemimeni, Harin Mutal Ke'evin Domein Bekever. So the Guf will say to Kadosh Baruch Hu, look, it's the Neshama's fault. And I'll prove it to you. What happens since the Neshama left me? I'm sitting in the grave. I'm not doing anything. No Averus after the Neshama left me. And at the same time, the Neshama can say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look, I'm in the clear. Clearly, I didn't do anything wrong. In fact, look at me now as I am divided from my body. I'm just floating in the air. I'm not doing any Averus. So Rebbe says to Antoninus, it doesn't work that way. I'll give you a mashal. So a king had a field with a lot of good fruit on the field. Fig, says Rashi. On the top of Tzadi Alpha Med Beis. And two guards were watching. Echad chigev, echad suma. One was unable to walk, one is able to see. I granted, by the way, the king could have had better guards, but okay, it's a mashal. Amar lo chigel asuma becharos naos ani roe bepardes ba'avir kivenu v'nivim la'achlam. So to which now they did an unbelievable tag team together. Meaning the lame person said to the blind person, look, you can't see, I can't walk, so let's combine our forces. So you put me on top of your shoulders and I'll tell you where to go. So rachav chigel agabi suma. So the lame person now is on the shoulders of the blind person. Ve'evim ba'achlam. And so now they went and they ate all the figs. Le'yamim ba'ba'al pardes amrlam b'choros na'os heichan hein. And the owner of the field said, hey, where are the figs? Amr lo chiger klum yesh li reglaim la'alech ba'hem. To which the lame person said, well, I got no legs. Or I don't have functioning legs. Couldn't have been me. Amr lo sum lo klum yesh li anayim l'ros. The blind person says, I can't see where I'm going. Couldn't have been me. So ma'asa hirkev chigar agabe suma v'dan osam ke'echad. So what does the field owner do? He knows what they did. So he basically stacked the lame person on top of the blind person. And he says, okay, so fine. So I can't judge you individually. I'll judge you together. Afakash baruch hu mevi neshama v'zorka beguf v'dan osam ke'echad. Kash baruch hu takes the body, takes the soul. And puts them together, judges them together. Shenemar, Yikarei al Shamayim me'al v'al arts l'din imo, Yikarei al Shamayim me'al zin Hashama, v'al arts l'din imo z'aguf. Kadosh Baruch Hu takes Shamayim v'aretz, spirit, neshama, and body, puts them together in order to judge them together. Okay, let's do a little bit more for this morning. We're going to be almost caught up to where we should be. Armel Antoninus l'Rebbe mimnei ma'achama yotze b'mizrav reshokas b'marav. Antoninus asked the following question to Rebbe. You know, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Why that order? So to which Rebbe says to Antoninus, look, if it would have gone the other way around, you would have asked me the same question. Meaning, it's an arbitrary question, and you're not really bothered by that question. To which Antoninus says, you're right. So he says, no, this is really what I mean. Why does it set in the west? It bows to its creator, meaning we have a general assumption that the Shekhinah is situated in the east, and so what it does is that it bows. So as it was coming out of my mouth, I'm like, that's wrong. Okay, the Shekhinah is situated in the west, right? When you think of the Beis HaMikdash, by the way, the more westbound you go, the higher you go in Kedusha, right? In other words, a simple walk from east to west in the Beis HaMikdash, you're going to the Azara, you're going to the Heichal, you're going to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Right? In other words, you're ascending in Kedusha. So the general idea is that the Shekhinah is more concentrated in the west. So the idea of the sun setting in the west is to bow to its creator. Okay. We say it every day in Pesukah de Zimra, that not only do we bow to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but even the celestial bodies bow to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. So the Gemara says, okay, well, maybe sun can make it to the noon sky, and once it now hits the western horizon, so it doesn't have to all go all the way down and go down and descend below the western horizon, but basically maybe it can just kind of slip away after it hits the noon sky. So mishum poalim mishum overi derachim. Well, Rebbe says no, because basically then what's going to happen, if that's true, and again, astronomically, how does that happen? I'm not sure. But that doesn't matter. Rabbi says, but if that would be the case, if that's how nature would work, so then basically there would be no heads up that the sun is setting. And then the workers and the people traveling, so they're going to hit instant night. In other words, the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu set it up is that basically warning to the travelers, you know the sun's going to set. Amalei Antoninus L'Rabbi Neshama Me'emas Aynina Ba'adam Mishas P'kira Mishas Yitzira. What point in time does the neshama enter into the formation of a fetus? Is it from the time of Pekira, or is it from the time of Yitzira? Now, Yitzira is formation. Rashi describes it as Nikram Kula Bebasa Vigidim Epsamos. Basically, it's some sort of formation of the fetus internally. Now, I would have suggested 40 days, but first of all, the Gemara doesn't say that, and Rashi doesn't say that. I don't know. Meaning it's at some point of gestation, when you have some formation. And that's Yitzira, or Pekida, Rashi describes it as, Misha Shamach, Poked Atipa Mevil Lifnei Amakom Mate Ala Kedamina Beper Kol Ayad, Vemeseches Nida Miyad Nizruka Bo Neshama Vechayas. Each Zera is presented to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is asked the question, what's going to be of the Zera? And certain attributes of the Zera is already going to be determined. And that will be the point of Pekida. Okay? And that's the second parak of Nida. So, Amalei Mishas Yitzira. So, Rebbe's answer was from the time of the Yitzira. Meaning, at some point of formation within the womb. Some embryonic stage. Amalei Efshech Haticha Shabbasa Omedes Shol Sheyamim Belo Melech Veina Masrachas. So, he says, no, it's impossible. Meaning, that look, it's just basically it's an organic entity, but in other words, a piece of meat as an organic entity. If it's left on its own, it's going to decompose. In other words, I have to assume that even as a developing fetus, it has to have a neshama at that point in time, otherwise it would decompose. Elamishas Pekida. So therefore, he counters and he argues that no, the neshama has to enter it already from the shots of Pekida. So, and yes, this Gemara, it's a God of Gemara in nature. So in other words, to turn this Gemara into a halachic point may or may not be correct. Right, in other words, in terms of, you know, when does life begin? So just, I'm just cautioning that to take a piece of a Gadato that we're learning right now and to convert that into a halachic discussion is a cautionary note. Anyway, we continue. Am Rabbi Davaz Zelamani Antoninus Mikra Messiah. So Rabbi says, you know, Antoninus taught this to me. And you know what? The truth of the matter is the Pasuk actually proves him to be correct. Like I mentioned in the beginning, Rabbi and Antoninus had a very good relationship. It was not an adversarial relationship. And here you see, it's rather remarkable, that Antoninus made a point to Rabbi, and Rabbi conceded the point, and Rabbi said, you know what? The man's right. They had a good relationship. Shenamar of Kudasach Shamar Ruchi. So it quotes the Pasuk from Eov, already at the point of Pekida, meaning even before formation of the fetus, the neshama enters. When does the Yetzirah enter into the person? So is it from the point of Yetzirah or from the point of Yetzirah? So your two options are either from conception or from the point of emergence, when the fetus emerges from the mother. Amalei Mishas Yetzirah. So the first answer that Rabbi gives to Antoninus is, oh, it's from the formation of the fetus, from some embryonic stage. Amalei imkein boed b'mei imo. Now, if the Yetzer Hara would enter into the embryonic stage, so then the Yetzer Hara would basically, the embryo would be destructive in nature, kicking the mother, v'yotze. Ela mishas yitzia. So Antoninus, once again, corrects Rabbi, and Antoninus says that he thinks that the Yetzer Hara enters only after the fetus emerges. I'm Rabbi Devazeli Manatani, Antoninus a Mikra Messiah. And again, Rabbi concedes, and Rabbi says, you know what, he's right. And, again, a careful reading of Chumash would indicate this is so, last week's Parsha. Shenema lepetach chatas roveitz. That when is sin crouching? At the entrance. Meaning, the way we're understanding this pasuk now is that when the fetus emerges from the mother, then it gets a Yetzer Hara.
Great Christian concept.
Yeah. Right. And also, by the way, just think about how we clearly identify the neshama entering at an earlier stage and then the Yetzer Hara entering at a later stage. Okay. I hear that. Okay. Okay, this will be our pause point for today. We're mostly caught up. Okay, and welcome to the 11th parak of Sanhedrin.